Oh, did you? I didn't get yours then.
Without audio. There should be no audio now, right?
Hi there.
Hello.
Hiya. Sorry, we're just getting set up on our end over here. How is everyone doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Fine, thanks.
Fantastic. We'll just give it a couple more minutes and see if anyone else is going to dial in, and then we'll get started. That's all right?
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you. Hi guys, aware it's 3 o'clock, but we were expecting a couple more people, so we're just going to wait a few more minutes, if that's all right?
No problem.
Hi there. Hi there. How are you doing? We're just going to give it. Good. We're still just going to give it a little while longer. It's a couple more minutes and see if anyone else is going to dial in. Can everyone hear me all right? Just wondering.
Yeah,
sounds
clear for me.
Fantastic. Thanks. guys. Thanks everyone for your patience. I think we'll have a few more people joining us as we get into the call. Just before we get started, can everyone see the slides?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. So thanks first and foremost for dialing in to today's first webinar, kicking off our research agenda. Before we get started, I just thought I'd bore you with a few housekeeping bits. I hope everyone's found Zoom okay to use. But I just wondered if I could ask you all to mute your lines when you're not talking. This can help reduce some of the background noise and make it easier to hear people. Secondly, and most importantly, this is an interactive and informal webinar, and we'd love to hear from you throughout the session. So please do join in, give us feedback, and ask us questions. If you have a question and you wish to type it, we have a chat channel that you might have seen. You can click on the More button, and it says Chat, and it will pop up. And you can add questions to the group chat, or you can send me messages privately, if you'd rather. You can raise your hand, which I'm just orientating myself around this as well. But you can click near your name, and you can click raise your hand. But the easiest way to do it, if you're comfortable, is just to unmute and ask a question whenever you feel that you have to say something. So just do join in with the discussion throughout. And finally, as you know, Labs is still learning and developing, so we're going to be recording this webinar. Please do let me know if you have any questions about this. And also, if you want to shut down your video or any of that, do feel free to do whatever makes you feel most comfortable. Okay, great. So on to introductions. My name is Hannah Patel, and I'm the Insight Manager at Q Labs, and I'm going to be chairing today's webinar. We really appreciate your engagement today. And I just wondered if you guys would want to introduce yourselves to the rest of the callers. I can see who's on the line, so maybe I could knit round, and if you wanted to introduce yourselves and say a little bit about you, that would be great. So I see we've got Katie on the line. Hi, is that Katie on the line, or we've got Liz?
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm primary care, portfolio GP with third sector experience and quality improvement, background work with Vanguard.
Fantastic, thank you very much for joining us. I can see we've got Sally on the line.
Hi, I'm Sally East. I'm an organisational psychologist, interested in all of this really, from a personal, professional point of view, and taught some health psychology.
Great, thanks so much for dialing in. I can see we've also got Jacqueline. I can't hear you. I think you might be muted.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Jacqueline Morton from Southern Trust in Northern Ireland. Background in setting up peer support groups, and very interested in sharing some of the work that we've done within our own trust, within mental health, and within our breast screening service.
That's great. Thank you very much for calling. Caitlin? Caitlin's on the line. Is there anyone else I've missed? Sorry, I can't see everybody's names.
Yeah, I'm here, Vicky Dunn. I'm an improvement lead at UCLH with a nursing background.
Great, thank you. Anyone else wants to introduce themselves? I can see you've got some other callers on the line, which is great. So do feel free to chip in and introduce yourself if you want at some point in the conversation. So thanks, everyone. We'll now get started with the webinar. As you can see here, this is the agenda for today's session. And we're going to cover a little bit of an introduction to the labs for those who don't know much about it already. And then we're going to deep dive a little bit into our chosen challenge and some of our research approaches. So to start us off, can I introduce you to Tracy Webb, who's our director here at Q Labs, who will provide a brief overview of the labs.
Hi everyone, really nice to virtually meet you and connect again with some of you who are on the line. So I'm just going to take us through just a bit of an introduction to Q and to the lab, just to kind of orientate us before we start. Struggling with the technology already. So what is Q? Thank you. Some of you guys, I think, are Q members, some of you are not. So just as kind of a brief kind of potted history, Q was, initially the idea was kind of conceived by Don Berwick. He wrote Hard Truths, as many of you will know, on the back of Midstats. And in that he talked about just how much great work was happening across the UK in the NHS. He was thinking particularly around safety, but how often it was in silos, and there wasn't an easy way to connect and collaborate and kind of make the most of this collective experience that was dotted all across the UK. To cut a long story short, NHS England, as was at the time, now NHS Improvement, contacted the Health Foundation and kind of said, we want to do something to respond to this idea that Don has had. What can we do? They thought about the fact that the Health Foundation has a background in leadership. And so Q was born. So it was expanded beyond England, it was UK-wide, and it's expanded to all domains of quality. And it is essentially a community, so a community of people who can connect and work together to improve health and care. It's being set up for the long term, so it's an infrastructure to support people in their work and make it easier through a variety of means for people to share ideas, to enhance their skills, and to collaborate in various ways. So then what is the lab? The idea for the lab was kind of a bit of a seed of an idea at quite early stages back in 2015 when Q was first being developed. And I'm just going to talk through a few components of what the lab will look and feel like in the moment. But ultimately, the lab is about finding a way for people to systematically work together to connect around shared complex problems and make progress on them. So if lots of Q is kind of self-organising and organic, the lab is sort of trying to bring people together in a slightly more kind of systematic way. There's a whole range of kind of components of what is making up the lab, and you will all know, or most of you will know at least, the lab is kind of at a very early stage. So this is the first time we've tried this. This is our pilot year. We're getting going. So a lot of what we'll be doing over these coming months we'll be doing for the first time, and we'll be iterating with you all. But as I say, the components that make up the lab, Q is a massive, massive asset to the health and care system. There's 799 Q members as things stand. We think there'll probably be a couple of thousand by the end of the year, which is just an amazing privilege to be able to work with such a diverse and kind of skilled professionals. So within that community, there's lots of expertise, and the labs will hopefully kind of galvanise them and support them to come together. In addition to that, the lab is trying to bring in a kind of range of other people who are maybe not within Q, but are perhaps experts in their fields. So we'll talk a lot about peer support today. Peer support is the topic for the first challenge that the lab is working on. And we'll be hoping to kind of bring together people who've got kind of expertise in this area, patients who've got experience in this area, going outside of Q to kind of pool our diverse knowledge. And this is a picture from our first workshop in which we were doing that, some of you might recognise. The lab will also kind of bring together data and research about the challenge that it's working on. So the lab isn't a research institute, it's not set up to do kind of primary research, but instead it will kind of build on what is known and find new ways to kind of bring that together, make it digestible, make it useful, and bring new perspectives together on that research and data. And finally, the lab will kind of bring together a bunch of tools to help us kind of get into some of this. You're not supposed to be able to read that, it's just illustrative, but the lab will really be taking a whole systems approach to change, so finding ways into these complicated problems. So then this is just quite a high level outline of the shape of the year when we're looking at the peer support project. And sets out some of the kind of key phases. So as you'll see, we've got research and discovery phase that's kind of currently ongoing and running through to the summer. In reality, that runs throughout the whole year. We're going to be researching and discovering things as we go along. This is perhaps a simplistic diagram just to help to kind of give a bit of clarity about the shape of the year. You can see on there that in July, we've got a deep dive workshop. I think you've all been invited to that. And we'll share a little bit more about that as the webinar goes along, and then it gives you a sense of kind of as we get into the summer, we'll be generating ideas, hopefully testing and simulating some ideas that we've been generating. We'll be hoping to see new coalitions and relationships forming, and then as we go through to the end of the year, I guess that's just focusing our minds on the fact that this challenge is time limited, so we'll be working on peer support for kind of 9 to 12 months. So as we kind of come towards the end of the year, end of the financial year, we'll be thinking about distilling the learning and kind of building for the next steps beyond the life cycle of the lab project. There's a whole bunch of stuff that isn't on this slide that's really trying to think about what is the lab learning in this first year. So as a pilot, what is our evaluation looking like? What are we thinking about future business models? What would we do differently next time if we secure the funding to do that? But won't try and crowd this one slide too much. I just wanted to touch a little bit then on some of the outcomes that the lab is hoping to kind of achieve. And I guess it would be really simple to describe if the lab was trying to do one kind of killer thing, if we were trying to design the product that would come out of the end of this that would kind of make improvements to care, or if we were just trying to act as a community to form new relationships and collaborations. But in actual fact, the theory of change around the lab is predicated on the fact that we hope to catalyze and support improvements in a number of areas, and that those will be kind of greater than the sum of their parts, if you like. So this is just a kind of simplistic diagrammatic way of showing that. We clearly hope that through the lab, improvements to practice will be generated, that the people, you guys who work with us and others who are connected, will kind of uptake some of the learning and develop some of that learning. We hope that we'll form new relationships and collaborations, and we hope that we'll be able to kind of enhance people's skills and confidence in dealing with some of these complicated challenges. And in a slightly more diffuse way, perhaps over time, if the lab, say, is around for the longer term, or perhaps if people are more involved with the lab, some of these, some of seeds of change might grow further, so new relationships might become communities of practice. Kind of we might be able to extract more sort of generalizable learning about how we tackle complex problems and the conditions that are needed, and how we can really spread using this this amazing opportunity through the Q community. So this is just giving a sense of kind of what is the lab trying to do, and we're working with our evaluation partners around Europe. They will be helping us to kind of think through and start to measure how will we know if this is starting to happen, how we know if the lab is starting to catalyze change, and hopefully you guys will tell us as well, how will we know if this proves to be a useful intervention in the system over the next kind of 12 months. So I will leave it there, and I'll hand back to Hannah, who will talk to you a little bit more about the challenge and the research strategy from there on in. Actually, before I do, Is there any kind of questions or things that are really not clear? There'll be lots of opportunities to unpack the challenge, but anything that anybody thinks just doesn't make sense in what I've said? I want more clarity on.
It's not something that makes sense necessarily, but just on a practical basis, it might be helpful to have a collaboration platform around this. Mm-hmm. So because email trails about it, it's quite difficult if you get lots of emails. And also that collaboration platform could be interactive. So something like the webinar could be put on and questions around it. And dates set for a year in advance for those of us for clinical things. We need quite a lot of things. So some practical aspects, that particularly the collaboration platform, would be helpful.
Yeah, Liz, I think that's a really good point. And I think ideally we would have had that up and running already, because we are conscious that there's kind of limits to what you can do, as you rightly say, with email and things. We're kind of exploring some of those platforms at the moment. So we are hoping that BuddyPress will be available to us very soon. I don't know if you guys have tried BuddyPress. I think, yeah, there are some limitations to it, but it does allow us to have interactive conversations, and you can kind of dip in and dip out and see what's going on. And we're also kind of looking at some other tools for collecting kind of intelligence, that's maybe a bit more sophisticated than some of the survey tools, but, you know, a way for people to kind of feed in on quite a vast scale. But I think you're right. I think certainly we need to start developing platforms. One of the things they're thinking is, how do we do that in a way that, how do we test things in a way that isn't overload, so you've suddenly got five things to interact with? So we'll probably start kind of slow, but try and build that up so that we can facilitate online conversation as well. Cool. Okay, fab. Well, I'll leave it there. And yeah, really look forward to having conversations with you guys throughout the webinar. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tracy. So as Tracy briefly alluded to, which is the topic itself, which is within the field of peer support, so I thought I'd talk to you guys a little bit more in detail about the challenge itself. Following a vote on a broad theme back in January, and then a workshop in March, which delved deeper into the chosen theme, empowering people to manage their own health and care needs. It was this challenge that was chosen by both Q members and non-Q members. So the challenge is, what would it take for effective peer support to be available to everyone who wants it, to help manage their long-term health and well-being needs? For those who might be hearing it for the first time, you can see that it's quite a challenge, made up of many separate components. Oliver, one of our lab designers, will begin the next stage of the webinar by discussing our proposed research approach, and then Howis, who is our other designer, is going to talk to you and break down this challenge a little bit. So I'm going to hand you over to them now.
Hi everybody, my name is Oliver, and first off, just to quickly introduce myself. So as part of the lab team, there are two designers, myself and Howis, that you can meet very soon. And one of the things that we've been asked to do is bring a design perspective on the way that the lab is formulating its questions, and also how best to kind of come up with answers and to push the agenda forward. I think it's worth noting, particularly with such an exciting topic and such a topic that has huge amount of considerable lived experience, but also a huge amount of research associated with it, is that from our point of view, we are not here to try and bring together a whole new perspective on the research to add to all of the learning that's already there. What we really want to do is engage with all of you as part of the community, the Q community, and those interested in the topic, and to work in a much more action-based research way. So to bring together those conversations and to think of things more from the point of view of understanding what you've tried, what's worked, what hasn't worked, what those challenges are, and then help that formulate our brief as we go forward and into the workshop in July. So very quickly, one of the things that we established, as we've discussed, particularly I think because of peer support and the way that it has that relationship that between at a granular level two people, we need to acknowledge that subjective and objective perspective. So we're really trying to look at both and talk to both those people that engage and commission and manage and deliver peer support, but also those that are a part of receiving peer support. So find that perspective, number one. The second is the constant learning. And this kind of connects a lot to what Tracy's talking about in terms of the formulation of the lab, is that we're not necessarily starting the year by saying, this is a question that we need to answer, and by the end of the year, we need X number of products or X number of spin-outs that will solve those problems. But really, it's about being able to build on that current knowledge base, and then from that point of view, make sure the lab itself, as a collective of individuals, all with different levels of expertise, to build that learning, but then engage with you guys in July to pull in another 70, 80 people who will help us understand in real depth what this challenge involves. And then the last thing to say in terms of the research approach is this idea of mixed methodologies. So we have data research, we have reading, we'd have all of those things that we're looking at, but we would like to engage with each of you, particularly you guys that have come forward on the call over the coming weeks, to either talk to you in detail, whether that's an interview over the phone or in person, and then also to start up some ethnography and start to engage with you directly in your place of work and see how those things unfold for you and some of the detail connected to that. So all of these different aspects brought together to try and challenge, I guess, to receive wisdom about whether peer support is particularly valuable in certain conditions, and to broaden that scope, but also to think about how it can spread far and wide and meet the sense of the topic itself. So in terms of that approach, can I ask, are there any sort of thoughts, comments, in terms of quick feedback? Jacqueline, I think, are you muted? Let me... Are you?
I just think it sounds really exciting. Oliver, yeah?
Great. Yeah, because we could hear you talking, but I think you're muted.
All right.
So I think in terms of that, it's now, I'm going to hand over to Harris, and what she's going to do is talk through some of the work that we've started so far and outline the detail of the research approach, and then I'll come back and talk to you when we look at the impact. Thank you very much. Great to meet you all.
Yeah, good idea.
Hello, I'm Howie. Nice to meet you all. Okay, so thanks Ollie. As Ollie just said, I'm just going to very quickly take you through how we approached this at the beginning. So we've given this brief about peer support. So we thought, you know, what is peer support? What does that even mean? So Ollie, who's our resident English scholar, looked at the etymology of peer support, and we made this visual display of what the etymology says is. So we've got peer, which can mean equal level. So somebody who is, or something that is, at an equal level to that of something else. And exchange. So there's some sort of exchange going on there. And then with support, it can be split into two sections. One section is carry, so carrying something, and the other is from below. So we're quite visual beings. We like this approach. It helped us. So the other thing that we did was we looked at existing definitions given by other organisations, and we found that they varied quite a lot. So what we want to do is to create our own definition of what peer support means within the lab and moving forward with this project and with the challenge. So we also then looked at the brief in more detail, because it's a really wordy brief. And what we wanted to do was try and look at it in smaller sections to see to try and understand what it meant, basically. So, and also that raised a whole load of questions. So at the top of the screen, you can see our target group. So we've split the brief into two sections, our target group and what we can achieve, or what we're hoping to achieve. So at the top, we've got people that manage their own needs. That's who we're targeting. In terms of their long-term health, well-being and care. And they want help and support from a peer. And can we make it available for everyone so that it's empowering? So that is just the brief rephrased. So from the top line, people that manage their own needs. So questions that we have, for example, are, what does manage mean? What is the spectrum of needs one can manage successfully? Do we need to understand the context why people aren't often able to manage their own needs currently? I have to say, I've just picked out a few questions. We have pages and pages of questions in each section. So, in terms of long-term health, well-being and care, how would the brief differ if it said short-term instead of long-term? And is peer support only appropriate for long-term needs? And what does long-term even mean? So people who... Oh, it's not switching now. Is it just delayed? Oh, thanks. Technical support, Hannah. Thanks. So people who want help and support. So I think this one's quite an interesting one, because should it be want or should it be need? So that's quite a big question that we have at the moment. So moving on to peer, that's okay. Yeah. So peer support, like I said, is something that we want to define. Who is the peer, basically? And then when we move on to what we can achieve, we want to make it available for everyone, but also importantly, we've added a word here, which is we want it to be available and effective. And then, when does support turn into empowerment? Does it become self-generated? We don't know. These are questions that we have.
We've just got, join in. We've just got somebody on, I think it's Sally as well, on the comment, has kind of written kind of, you know, what is long-term and short-term, and that's something that we've been thinking about, but might be worth pausing kind of as we've gone through this slide to just have a think about people's experience or knowledge of peer support in either long term or short term. We found very little that has kind of specifically targeted itself as short term, but it'd be really interesting if anybody on the webinar has any experience or knowledge of anything, any peer support in short term conditions.
Just to say, we can't actually see everybody's faces, so we don't know if you're trying to talk or not, but you've got your microphones muted.
Hi, it's
Hi, Sally.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Sally.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, drawing sort of on generally wider experience, sort of peer supporting learning groups, you know, can be a really short, you know, day thing or hour thing or week thing, or, you know, so it's about sort of saying where are we a group, and how do we form, and how do we then kind of relate to each other, isn't it? And in a time frame.
Yeah,
I think as far as peer support goes, the short term, there's no reason that medics might even know about this. It's sort of all sorts of social prescribing and other people that will talk to their own cultural groups. We wouldn't even know it's happened. So,
yeah.
So it could be a few hours, the condition might have hay fever on a day. So I'm not quite sure how much you want to define, because it's a massive subject, isn't it?
Exactly. And in a way, it's really difficult to define. It's a continuum, isn't it? And I guess I'm thinking about the formal and informal support, that the thing that just happens, you know, as you go along, that isn't documented, is very interesting, isn't it? It's trying to sort of, it's a whole job of quantifying it.
It is. And one of the things we thought of was how much do we kind of open this up? And I guess this is the bit where we're just opening up a lot. But in terms of the lab project, really thinking about scale of peer support. So what does it look like at scale, if everybody who wanted it could access it? And that will sort of guide, I guess, some of how we choose to respond to these things. So kind of, is online the way to get scale for these short-term kind of bursts? I mean, question mark. But when we're thinking about all of these, kind of what does it look like at a larger scale? And I think, as is it Liz or Sally said, kind of how much does that need to be integrated with kind of medical interface? What does that, if we're thinking about kind of long-term support, how does it connect?
Ideally, it wouldn't be interfaced with the medical thing, because they're actually saturated already. I think it's recognised that we sort of underestimate patients' ability, certainly from primary care. A lot of primary care physicians feel as though, up to 40% of people potentially don't really need to come and see us. It's just they haven't got other support in other ways. And I'm not sure we're particularly good with those consultations, with signposting. So if the system's overloaded and patients have a better place to go with care navigation, I don't see why we should be involved, except on the points where people have genuine concerns that it might be make them quite ill. Something like sepsis can be actually quite trivial as an initial symptom. So it's actually clearly defining those interfaces of what worries people.
Yeah. We've got another comment in as well from Katie about the difference between wanting and needing support, which I think is a really interesting point. And kind of, if you don't know what's out there, you can't necessarily want it. So do you not want something because you genuinely don't want it, or do you not want it because you don't exist and it's kind of open to you? And that, again, it feels really important when we're thinking about scale. Kind of, is there a vast support network that might be existing that is not kind of on people's radar?
Hello.
Oh, hello, Caitlin. We can hear you.
Oh, I am heard. I had a bit of trouble earlier. Not to worry. Yes, my name's Caitlin. I work at the CCG in Gloucestershire, and I'm at the starting point of commissioning some sort of peer support across disease groups. I haven't quite decided which, and I think I'm struggling a little bit at the moment with understanding the landscape of peer support. And I think what's coming out for me is that there's peer support, which is the really groundswell stuff that goes on, you know, small local groups, etc., organizing themselves, which probably would never get on our commissioning radar, versus something I'm thinking of, which is, and I'm calling it peer mentoring, which is something that's a bit more shaped in terms of an intervention, and just going back to this idea of long-term and short-term peer support, I think what I'm thinking of is saying, well, let's do something like peer mentoring, which is something that's a bit of a program. It might be sort of, I don't know, 12 contacts, and it has an output which might be supporting somebody to actually think about their goals and produce some sort of self-care plan. So I think of that as the sort of short-term peer stuff I might be commissioning, whereas I think of the VCS as providing that longer-term, very important, kind of ongoing social and emotional support, which I'm calling peer support.
Okay, that's an interesting definition, yeah.
I suppose just building on Caitlin's comment there, there's something about the construct around peer support where health service providers are leading on the development and how it's shaped, as opposed to what Caitlin was saying about people who actually rally themselves into support groups in the local community without any inputs from health. I suppose it's understand the dynamics of both of those and what we can learn from that moving forward.
Yes, it does actually. It does lead us on. It's nicely in. Okay, so we'll be touching upon some of those things a bit later, actually. So the landscape of peer support, and I think it feeds quite nicely into the section that's coming later. So we'll continue this discussion if we have time, hopefully. So we're divergent thinking at the moment. We're trying to ask a load of questions, seeing what's relevant and what's important, and then when we have all those questions, we're trying to figure out how we can answer them, basically. So I'm going to hand you over to Ollie now, who's going to discuss our research approach at the moment. And I'm sorry, to Hannah now.
Sorry, I'm going to hijack it for a minute. And just introduce you to the three elements of our research approach. Didn't really know where to begin, as has just touched upon. This is a huge topic that could be perceived in so many different ways. But what we thought would be really helpful in this short first phase of our research is to break it down into three clear elements that we think would provide a good overview of the topic and help us dive a little bit deeper. So this slide shows the three elements that I speak about, which make up our research approach. We hope the outputs of each of these elements will drive discussions and draw out key insights that we can take on at the workshop and other events going forward. So first and foremost, I'm going to talk about element number one, the distribution and variation of peer support services. This first element looks to assess those two factors, the distribution and variation of peer support services across the United Kingdom. We're focusing on mapping services according to the target age of the recipient, be them young, 18 or under, working age, 18 to 65, or those older people who are 65 and over. We're looking to map the peer support services via the focus of their peer support, where they provide support for those with mental health conditions, physical health conditions, or a combination of both. We're also very interested in whether the peer support providers are independent local providers, those smaller, sort of smaller, more unknown providers that we just touched upon a little bit, or whether they're regional, that they've been scaled up on a regional, national level and are multi-site providers. We hope that this exercise will give us a strong sense of, a strong sense of what services are currently available across the UK. And also by mapping what is there, we hope we can find out a little bit of what isn't there and identify those populations which are underserved, where there are gaps in access and whether there are gaps in terms of specific conditions lacking peer support services. This approach is very much a work in progress. All of this is very much a work in progress, and we've chosen these topics based on discussions between myself, the designers, and the wider team. But I wondered if you guys had any thoughts on these categories we've chosen. At the moment, I would be very interested in seeing if there are any other categories you'd think would be interesting to be mapped, and also whether you had ideas of examples, if there are sources where I can find out more about these peer support locations. So please do let me know if you've got any questions or thoughts.
There's quite a strong peer support infrastructure within maternity services.
Yes.
I don't know, it's probably out with the hypothesis that you're trying to test, so that would be the only thing. But I mean, I think I still think there's lots to learn, how they have rallied themselves and the infrastructures they've set up in local communities. And in some areas where that is actually quite woman-driven as opposed to health provider-driven.
Yes, so bottom-up, more of a bottom-up approach.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Do you guys think...
Karen. Sorry, it's Caitlin. One of the things that I'm interested in as I'm kind of doing my information gathering stage prior to sort of commissioning is what exactly people are doing with the people that they're supporting.
Okay.
So, and I'm not sure whether that fits in any of your boxes. Maybe it does, but, you know, are they doing telephone support?
Yes.
You know, are they doing one-to-ones? Is there an output? Is it about setting, what's the purpose of that peer support? I'm kind of interested in getting into that because I think that's potentially where some of the magic happens.
Absolutely. Well, you're in for a treat because we're about to, our next stage of the research is looking at exactly that. Breaking down in terms of what the provision looks like, in what format and what mediums and the ratios of peer supporters, supportees, etc. So we're about to cover that, which we think is just as important as well. This has, oh, sorry, Karen?
Something could I ask, if you're looking at the level of support that people might need, is one of the things is people are looking at is a patient activation measure because it shows their understanding, because a lot of people, when they go into support, just give them the standard package of 12 things to learn, where somebody might actually have a lot of knowledge about the diabetes. So I'd be interested in measures to of that person's understanding of the condition and then a tailored support, an approach to support. And also, rather than a mentoring scheme, more like a coaching thing, I'd be interested to know how that's being implemented. Certainly patient activation measures is one of the ways.
Great.
That's really interesting, Liz. We've been talking, we're at really early stages, as you can tell from this, but we're thinking a lot about that kind of that measurement. And patient activation measure was one of the ones we sort of toyed with, but, and then wondered kind of, is that, I don't know, does it feel holistic enough almost? But I suppose actually that is an existing data source that is out there and I guess people are using and could provide quite a good way into being able to point to outcomes, which I think I get a sense is one of the hardest things with peer support is really building that kind of business case and looking to the outcomes.
That's great. Is there any more thoughts or feedback? If not, then I will I'll introduce Harris back to talk about the next stage, looking at the patterns and peer support pathways, which we'll dive a little bit deeper.
Hello again.
We've got some music chair going on here because we're all trying to crowd around one laptop. Okay, so this basically leads on from what we were just discussing about the landscape of peer support. We didn't really know how to approach this. So what we were trying to do was to look at examples of peer support and how we could map them. So that's what we were aiming to do, is map existing peer support services and be able to compare them with each other. So what we did was try to come up with a list of questions that are discrete from one another that we can then ask for each service and come up with a different pattern for each one. Okay, it's quite difficult to explain, so I'll show you an example. So along the top we've got all the different questions, and then down the side the numbers are the different answers that could happen with each one. So this is, for example, what Weight Watchers might look like. Okay. Whereas this, for example, might be what the AGK befriending service might look like. And this is what a vlog might look like, so a video blog. And we're aware that many peer support services will have multiple strands, so we might end up with something like this instead of a single line. And these are kind of made up answers at the moment, just to show what it's like. But then the idea is that we'd be able to visually see the shape of an organisation or the shape of a peer support service or whatever it is on a single map and compare them, so that we can then say, well, actually all the ones that are really successful all have this in common, and all the ones that fail maybe have this individual thing in common, or whatever it is. At the moment, we don't really know what the output's going to be like, but that's kind of like the plan at the moment. So we have, I know it's too small for you to read at the moment around the top, but I'll just give you an example and then we'll discuss what you think might work on this map. So for example, we've got, the first column is balance, but what it actually means is what's the ratio between the peer supported and the peer supporter. So for example, is it a one-on-one session? One peer supporter, one peer supported. I thought it was, okay. No, yeah. Or is it a group of peer-supported people with one peer supporter? Or is it vice versa, a group of peer supporters with one person being peer-supported? Or is it a group of people who are both peer supporters and peer supported, so they're kind of supporting each other, for example? So that's just an example of something that one of the questions that could be asked on this map. So has anyone got any kind of initial ideas about this? So for example, level of support needed, what is the level of support needed? I think it was Liz that said that earlier. That could be a question on this, and then we could come up with discrete answers for it. And that could then form one of these columns. So has anyone else got any kind of thoughts about this? Jacqueline, it looks like you're talking, but I can't hear you.
I'm actually talking to myself. What I'm thinking, yeah. The level of support needed is very subjective, isn't it? Because yeah. I might assume you're quite needy, where in fact you think, no, I'm not needy at all. Or you know, so I think that's a hard one to measure. But it is an area definitely diving a bit deeper into to find out what we don't know, you know, or what challenges it poses for us. I do like the idea of the framework that you've put together. I mean, it gives you that whole at a glance. You know, even looking at a particular group that you're involved in, you see at a glance the model that's taken shape that perhaps you haven't taken cognizance of, you know, starting off with. I mean, I was quite fascinated with, you know, the idea that there's a pay for service. I'm not aware of any peer support groups that we're involved in. We actually pay, but sort of from a coaching or mentoring perspective, I am aware that there are some coaching and mentoring services that you pay for. It's interesting. I wonder, do we have many peer support groups where there's a funding implication? Perhaps there's a voluntary donation for tea and coffee or for building rent or something like that. Mm. Yeah.
We've got a comment as well that's come through in the chat, I think from Alex, that's talked about, I guess, building on your point there, Jacqueline, that peer support is very individual. And it would be interesting to potentially look at kind of how many peer support services have sort of self-defined goals. What does the goals and the outcomes look like, and how are they defined? That might be something that could get at that sense of kind of, you know, what are you getting out of it, but in a way that you could perhaps map different services onto it. Where do the goals come from?
Have you tried to map this against other systems? For instance, people might need more peer support at discharge or prior to entry or some other rehab program. So sometimes, certainly third sector gets a lot of helpline inquiries if a system isn't working, and that's when the peer support comes in. Have you tried to map, say, Age UK against your geriatric service or your frailty service and seen whether there's any connection?
Not yet, that's a great idea. Yeah.
I think what we're hoping is that once we've kind of done a little bit of work on this model, we can populate it with a whole range of peer support services and hopefully go out and ask people for what they know about their local peer support services so that we can start to build a really rich picture. We don't think that exists in kind of one place at the moment, so there's loads and loads of case studies and lots of great research, but kind of can we pull some of that together and start to map the landscape and really understand what exists and what commonalities or differences or divergence do they have, and are there any patterns in that?
Yeah, I think that would be immensely helpful. I mean, I've had a look at the evidence, and it's actually very difficult to compare one study against another because the things that they look at are so different and they're quite often not very specific. So to have something like this, I think it would be really, really helpful. And I'm actually about to embark on asking our VCS what their peer support sort of offers are, and it might be that perhaps I could use this in our local area to guide what I'm asking them, so it could fit in with your study.
Great.
Ms. Caitlin, am I right in saying you're in a commissioning position?
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Interesting. Well, we've sort of been having conversations, but it'd be really interesting to get your view about kind of I guess that evidence base and what from a commissioner perspective would really help to build the case for peer support, and what would that look like, and does that exist at the moment, or is that something that potentially the lab could hope to kind of add value to?
Yes, I think that would be incredibly helpful because, of course, you know, it's about securing those resources and demonstrating return on investment when you, you know, you go to your executive team to kick this whole thing off and get some funding. So, yeah, that would be very helpful to those of us who have that task.
I've got another thing that's come through on chat, I think from Vicky, asking whether the vision for the peer support is to be disease or needs specific. I think Vicky, are you asking kind of in terms of what the lab is doing, or are you thinking of something a little different to how I've explained it?
No, in terms of what the lab looking to do, so are you looking to be very generalised in an approach to something, or is there going to be a trial with a specific disease group or a specific cluster of needs for a patient and put something in place and see how that works? I just wondered what the planned approach was.
That's a good question, yeah. And an active question.
Yeah.
We've had some sort of challenge that maybe we should try and get disease specific and hone down the question, and I think that's still open. I think as things stand, we feel like there is some real value to be gained from keeping it as open as possible for as long as we can. So, for example, can we do this mapping exercise through a range of different kind of diseases and contexts? And is there anything we can learn out of that? And I guess at that point then, depending on who is being part of the lab, because the participants, you guys and others, will all be coming from different perspectives. And I guess we're keen to meet people where they are, as well as try and do some sort of overarching work to the lab. I think we'll then have a decision point kind of as we get into the summer. Do we think there's enough in here that is generalizable that we think is worth the added complexity of keeping this open? Or do we think actually we've gotten to a point where we're generating some ideas that feel like they need to be trialed in specific kind of clinical areas? But we're sort of resisting the temptation at the moment to narrow it down, but would be really, it is a very active question, would be really keen on people's thoughts about that.
Yeah, and just to add to that as well, not only are we trying to keep it broad, but we're kind of trying to look even broader than peer support almost. So kind of thinking about, are there any other services that do something really well that we can steal from? So for example, I mean, I don't know if this exists, but if pilot training involves two people working together to train and they do it in a very successful, efficient way, and that's kind of a buddy system, is there something from that we can take and learn from? So yeah, trying to keep it extremely broad at the moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think Jacqueline has just added a comment in, and I think possibly agreeing with some of what you said, at this point it feels like it would be good to get the breadth of learning across age and disease groups is sort of our thinking as well, to try and kind of keep the learning open.
Okay, so shall I just zoom through the next pages and then we can tie up a little bit, yeah? So these were just examples of questions we've already asked, but I'm not going to go through them because we've just had a good discussion about that and we're running out of time. So you can have a look later when it's on the website. Okay, so any questions? We've just done that. So I'll hand you over now to Ollie.
Hi, everybody. So in terms of then the third pillar of where we're looking from the point of view of the research, based on everything that we've established, so that idea of looking across people-centered need and location and mapping that stuff, and then across from what Health was talking to you all in terms of how do those pathways differ, we're now into understanding how the impact is measured. And as you all well imagine, there's a challenge there between the subjective and the objective, and there's a spectrum almost between at what point does the impact change from being subjective to objective, and can we sort of generalize those aspects as we map. So this piece of work in terms of the mapping from the pathways will get picked up and try and put things across the following four metrics: health outcomes, service use, whether that's sort of an increase in or decrease of service use, and then the patient experience, and then any connected behavior change. And there's something then that sits over the top of those metrics as well, which is about how does the spread or the breadth of these kinds of approaches differ when you think about it from a scale point of view. So as Hannah was talking about earlier, this idea, you might have a localized peer support network, which goes very deep and understands lots of local context, the people involved, all those dynamics. So you might have something which is general and can be applied to different locations and is relatively generic. And what's the difference then in terms of understanding what can scale and what needs very specific local knowledge? So just on that, are there immediate thoughts, responses, or questions that might add to the way that we're thinking about evaluating our research?
Another question might be, has anyone actually been involved in evaluating peer support services, or have any understanding of how rigorous some of that evaluation might be?
I think we've got maybe a question coming through on the chat.
We've just got some information that Sally is sending us about some models that we might be able to look at. I mean, I suppose it's worth saying that some of the evaluation metrics have this kind of work that's already started, so people might have seen Health Foundation and Nesta's work and realising the value that's kind of trying to look at the economic case of peer support. So again, kind of looking to kind of build on what is known and think about, I don't know, is there kind of a business case development that might be relevant, that multiple people might think is helpful? There might not be, but you know, is that the kind of thing that would be good when we're thinking about, somebody mentioned PAMS earlier, to think about kind of patient experience and activation, which is clearly a kind of recognized tool. So there's a range of things that we think we can draw on. It kind of links to the conversation earlier with Caitlin and what that would look like to build the case of peer support, I think.
Exactly.
There's a component of this that's invisible, isn't there? That there's a standard metric and then there's this invisible component that you're going to have to try and capture. I honestly don't know how you'd measure that. I think it's going to be really tricky. I don't know whether you actually measure the two boundaries that you know about and then go and then look at this gap. But I think some of this work just hasn't been done.
Mm.
And that we accept that.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is going to be the most challenging element for us to address.
I think, and it speaks a little bit to Caitlin, what you've been talking about in terms of, if you're in a position where you're beginning to structure and implement a peer support and you're building that evidence base and you're going through a commissioning process, what are the kind of things that you need that will help that make sense to commissioners and help that become a reality? So again, no, we don't necessarily have those answers right now, but in terms of the research and where we're going to for the workshop in July is to try and, from that point of view, try and understand that evidence-based build-up, but also to acknowledge, the kind of missing bit, that sort of impossible to define bit, which is so subjective. So just with that, what I'm going to do then is pass you back over to Hannah, and Hannah is going to talk through what's happening next and how to get involved.
Great. Thanks very much, everybody. Time flies. So I can't believe it's nearly 4 o'clock already. So I thought I'd draw the meeting to a close and talk a little bit about what's next and how we can get you involved. So today, first of all, was our first QLabs webinar. So we hope you enjoyed it, but do let us know if you had any feedback or anything you think we could do better. After this call, we'll get in touch and send you the deck and let you know how you can access the video, but also there'll be a small questionnaire. We'd love to have your feedback on how you found this afternoon session. So as Tracy explained at the beginning, the QLabs and the Q Initiative is all about the network and people like you guys who've dialed in today. So thank you very much. And basically what we would love to do is keep you engaged in our work and to continue to get you involved in our research phase. So whether that might be whether you're willing to be interviewed or you know people or institutions who might be worth speaking to and interviewing, ideas for focus groups, whether you'd like to host us for some of our ethnographic research,
Please do let us know. You can let us know via email, via Twitter. I'll come on to some contact details in a minute. Also, please, we'll keep in touch with you. We're going to talk about that in a second, but we'd love to crowdsource some more of your insights and perspectives through some key questions, which you're going to be organising in the next fortnight. So we'll share the details of that with you as well.
Just to say, we've got a few people coming through on chat who are already responding to Ham's call out. So
it's great.
Thank you so much. For those of you who have, we'll definitely follow up with you on that.
We really, really appreciate it. And we know how hard you guys are working in this field. And so please do spread the word about what we're trying to do and share some of the insights from today's webinar with your communities, because I feel like there are lots of people who would like to get involved that we'd love to meet and speak with. So in terms of the practicalities of that, you can find out more about what we're doing via the website. You can email us at any time via qlab@health.org.uk and follow us on Twitter. I'm going to send this deck out afterwards so you don't need to remember any of this stuff off by heart. But please do get in touch as and when you'd like to. And in terms of diary planning, we talked about this briefly at the beginning, how we can regularly stay in touch. We're going to be holding more webinars, a couple more in the next 6 weeks. And we'll send through details of that. And we'd hope that we use these opportunities to continue this conversation, to update you on what we've been doing in terms of research, but also for you to feedback to us on what you've been doing and continue this collaboration. We can also send you fortnightly e-updates, which will let you know progress in the lab. And we're working towards the deep dive workshop, which hopefully you're all coming to and know about, which is being held here in London on the 13th and the 14th of July. So we do hope you can all make it. But finally, from all of us, we just want to say a massive thank you for taking an hour out of your very busy days to join in the webinar and for being so active and contributing to so richly to our debate. So if anyone else has anything to say, please do chip in. And if not, we hope you have a lovely afternoon. But we can wish you well. So goodbye, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.